So, Erik Delin, do you have some early musical or auditory memories?
Yes, I have.
And what might these memories be?
Well,
you want me to talk about them? Like telling what they are? How I am connected to them? But why at all make them explicit? And does it interest you at all?
Yes, it does actually. You said yourself that you were interested in sharing some of these and reflecting upon them.
Okay.
But should I go chronically? Or go for a more associative path? I mean, the way things are put together, the order of them, the relations that may occur of this order might say more than the musical memories themselves.
I think my first encounter with sound, or at least music, was in the living room of our apartment when I was very young. Early on, I learned to put on an LP on the record player. And my absolute favorite was a final tune on Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Specifically, the orchestral cacophony build-up and the last chord. I put my ear as close as possible to the teak loudspeaker after the attack and listened as the sound of the three different pianos slowly disappeared. The sound of the sound-producing technologies itself of that time is apparent in my auditory memories, informing and at the same time forming them, as well as coloring my musical making continuously. And thus, maybe this inner groove, close to the center of the technology where the circling movement stems from, is an emblem of our time that points to the fact that recorded music and sound gets inscribed through repetition, into the wax of our neural and mental discs. A bit similar to learning a tune by heart, of course, but nonetheless comes with some other properties, qualities, and repercussions. And after some of these repetitions, it could be replayed in detail by ourselves, inside ourselves. In the silence you now will hear, I will be playing back inside myself some of what we just heard. Counting of McCartney followed by drummer Ringo Starr made a certain feeling, a tickling on the right side of my belly button at the age of 5, and might have contributed to my interest in drumming.
I think this resonating piano stayed with me for many years and came to the surface some years later when I escaped the wedding of my cousin.
The fading piano. Do you still remember that?
The wedding party took place in a house close to a church. And I slipped into the door of the empty church, which turned out to be open, and sat down at the piano in the middle of the building and played. I think it was the same year my grandfather died in front of me, an incident that made me write my first poem the same evening. But what we hear now can't be from that memory, or? I mean, did you record your wedding escape piano playing? No, I didn't. What we hear now is me playing the piano in the so-called school building at Utøya, an island outside Oslo, where politically engaged youngsters gather every summer. Because of the atrocities at that island in 2011, other kinds of memories are evoked by the ones that survived, also coming to sound, and how, in a landscape, sound relates to action, sounds that make you recall memories that grips your basic emotions of fear, grips your whole body. If I tell you that this piano was used as a shelter for the ones desperately trying to hide when the gunman was approaching, the instrument and the sound change even more because of this context. I remember a quite overwhelming experience with body and sound. I played in a marching band, and each and every year, in August, we played a daytime concert at my school, where the aim was to recruit new members of the ensemble. The older musicians didn't get permission to leave class to play this concert, so when the instrumental groups was presented one by one, flute, clarinet, saxophones, trumpet, trombone, tuba, and then percussion, I was not prepared to play a drum solo. So the conductor pointed at me, "Play the drum set." I sat behind the battery, went into total out-of-body experience. The space around me disappeared, which made me play extremely loud. When I was finished, the conductor seemed a bit blown away of the sound that reverberated in the sport hall we played in. The other kids looked at me like question marks, and maybe the whole solo came out as some kind of fury of aggression or whatever. I had no control, and afterward my heart was beating like wild and I was shocked by what happened. I guess this pivotal experience is still with me. Sometimes also coming back when I talk publicly in a debate or so. I had it, this kind of playing, inside of me, both because of the surroundings. At that time it was a quite harsh situation at school, but also because I was into heavy metal. I loved playing to the music of these metal bands, but I also kind of recognized that I paid even more notice to the weird intros and outros. The ending when it's the final day. I mean, What was this mesh of sound, really, that opens the tribute album from 1987?
I got left behind.
And the guitar riffs of Randy Rhoads.
Everyone goes through changes, looking to find a truth.
An album I think my best friend back then got as a pirate copy when he went to Thailand with his family. I guess you didn't know that it was the music of Carl Orff, which was used by Ozzy Osbourne. No, I discovered all of this 5 or 6 years later when I was asked to play Carmina Burana.
Don't look at me for answers. Don't ask me. I don't know.
Once, my father stopped to refuel his car at the petrol station south of the southern Norwegian mountains. I found an audio cassette on reduced price, which I bought and listened to for a week almost without a break. It is the overall sound of this bootleg album that I carry with me. A sound that is heavily colored by the technology of the analog magnetic tape, but also the sound of the drums, the guitar sound of Tony Iommi, his riff that made the basis of the first song with my own band. Here we are entering the tricky labyrinth of memory, because I was told by one of the band members that it is actually me singing here. I thought I never sung in this band, only playing drums, or what was my drum kit. Plastic boxes, some pot lids, a cymbal I bought in Leningrad, and a snare drum I bought for 350 kroner in Budapest, and hitting the floor with my right foot to make up a bass drum. And the strange thing is that the more I listen to the song, the more difficult it becomes to grasp that this is me. Either it is not me at all, or it is, and I will never acknowledge that it is me, because it certainly isn't. This was when the development of CDs started. The first one I bought, which was quite late, was a live album by Motorhead, released on CD in 1990. I had it in my room for a long time because I couldn't afford buying a CD player. Instead, I copied the same album from my friend onto a cassette tape. I remember interrupting my mother and father in the kitchen early one morning. I guess they were talking about something important, but I didn't notice that. I put my small cassette player on the table and pushed play. My father got so angry at me because of this sudden interruption that he took the bread he was cutting into slices and tossed it suddenly against me. It hit my stomach. I turned Motorhead off and went back to my room. The cassette player had also a record button, and one time I recorded my mother and father talking. The evening after, I placed the cassette player under the sofa while we all three were sitting there, playing back what I had recorded the previous day, trying to play tricks with them. After one of the band sessions that took place in the same living room, Martin, the bass player, left his guitar and loudspeaker. I remember turning it on, and because the bass guitar stood leaning against the amplifier and loudspeaker, a crazy feedback occurred. This sound struck me both as familiar with some of the sounds I just played, but also seemed immensely interesting with its almost hidden rationale of becoming.
Like whales.
Experimenting with the sounds that I could create by moving the guitar in and out of the space in front of the loudspeaker, meanwhile manipulating the strings, knots and volume, I encountered a massive wall of sound. Sound that took shape as volume, as architecture in both the room and in time. I remember the feeling of touching time, experiencing the flow of sound and form, how the continuous changing feedback made its way through the room and in time. Also, feedback is and carries this specific danger, the quality of a possible explosion, indicating a tipping point, upheaval, the danger of overdrive, of a sudden amplitude peak, a red zone that brings you flip into the other side or simply makes you deaf, or the sound indwells as feedback inside of you, as tinnitus, like no signal on the television screen. But most songs included these type of sounds only as small fragments and color, as introduction and ending. Not as core elements of musical material and building blocks. And for sure, I had no place to go with this interest. I kept on playing in bands. If I had heard Pendulum music by Steve Reich or Elegy for Amilcar Cabral, Bajor Pexino or Björn Fungos Galaxe, what would have happened? There is nothing exceptional with most of this. These are records that a bunch of people listen to. This makes it into a collective phenomenon. And the list is, of course, much longer. And I will not turn this reflection into a sentimental, self-centered down the memory lane podcast. Why not?
Because I'm afraid of sounding old.
But somehow you're getting old, at least older. So let's talk about life after death. Not life, Live After Death, the album by Iron Maiden. I see.
Fight in France, we shall fight on the seas and oceans, we shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength in the air, we shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be, we shall fight on the beaches, we shall fight on the landing grounds, we shall fight in the fields and in the streets, we shall fight in the hills, we shall never surrender. I do not for a moment believe.
What lies here is the theatrical aspect of music and music performance, the engulfing, the immersive and seductive quality of sound, and the partaking in huge and crowded concerts, which, by the way, mostly made me anxious. I didn't like being part of these crowds, standing close, and as an individual partaking in the collective ritual of the concert, entering into a world that many times are connected to riots, wars, and air battles. Also pointing to the heroic, the nationalistic, and even atavistic sides of this cultural and musical phenomenon. I'm thinking also of the qualities of radio, as the June 1940 speech of Churchill suggests. A speech that in audio only exists as a reenactment of the speech Churchill gave to the House of Commons, recorded 9 years later. This recording has made many people believe they actually remember hearing Churchill himself on the radio delivering this oration. You fancy radio, don't you? Yes, I do. It was an outlook to the world and at the same time an inner reflection, making it. Trying to carve out through fantasy my own voice and improvisation, some radio.
Oversaken I Overkjelland har nå altså blitt sunket og skal bli sunket. Og nå har den blitt sunket, vet du kanskje? Og nå skal bli nemlig tatt opp igjen.
I grew up accompanying my father at his work, as well as my mother. When I was with my mother, she gave me one of her dictaphones to play with while she was occupied with her work. With that recording device, I made hours of radio shows. Every hour, the bell of the town hall sounded close to her office. Then I announced some news, accompanied by a brief weather report that mostly was local, really local, I guess. And in between these hours, I was the host of many different music shows and documentaries.
Nå skal vi kanskje gå opp og kikke litt på disse hulene. Men du kan jo ikke se dem for jeg på radio. Okay,
what is intriguing to listen to, at least for me, is the continuous play and autonomy that my voice signals.
Ja, nå har vi snart oppe.
Talking and murmuring produced by this child. An earlier memory, actually one of two memories I have of my grandmother, that also might be one of my first memories, if that category really exists at all, was when she took me to a local shop at the corner of the main road, halfway down the street she lived, and bought me this candy stick, ending in a plastic wheel. It had this handle on top. A transparent tube filled with round, colorful candy. Green, pink, yellow, violet. Ending in this plastic wheel that touched the pavement while we walked down the street. She died in the summer of 1980, which means I was less than 4 years old. So, might we stop for a moment? Also, since we're nearly back to the beginning, then how has these early auditory experiences and by now memories affected your work as a composer and artist? I think it's hard to pin down. I'd rather let it stay as it is. Let it stay open and entangled at the same time and acknowledge and sometimes get surprised when I meet myself and encounter the background sounds and music of my life in the midst or sometimes in the mist of my own projects. But it is there, informing my choices and contributing to the style of music and artistic search that I pursued. Importantly as well, my path and memories goes into the network of culture and times I live in. All these memories consolidate a trajectory that might be hard to inflect. Either I revisit my musical memories intentionally, or they come back by themselves, with their own reinvented quests for me to solve or negotiate. The sounds perceived and music experienced in these formative years, let's say between the age of 4 and 15, becomes a framework not only for this radiophonic reflection you're listening to right now, but also as the foundation of my own artistic work. I see. And in a short while, we will hear your mashup of more specific music from that period. One of my early joyful experiences with music was having the sound of Bolero on the headphones of the Walkman of my mother while jumping in her bed for as long as the piece lasted. Many years later, I read in some magazine about the love life of Cher and Maurice Ravel's piece.
Thank you. fast ingen har talat. Du vet vad jag ber dig. Min längtan är bara du.
I recall you in the sea and sand.
I remember the sound of airplanes made of paper that we let go downwards from high above the square, or rather the circle that makes up the Fridtjof Nansen's Plus, which is behind the town hall of Oslo. This was the evening of the 3rd of October 1992, ending a one-night-only piece by Kjell Sandkopf. They glided down in their individual dance, unpredictable, spinning, making sloops, down to the audiences standing below. I got the recording of the performance the other day, and I was hoping to hear this particular incident on the recording. But I couldn't hear any sound of falling paper. Rather, the microphones had picked up the texture of whistling glissandi that we probably made accompanying the falling planes, a sound I didn't remember.
Hør suse fra dine veibaner blande seg inn i ditt åndedrett, og dine uteliggere som våkner på grønne benker i ditt resterende grønne
Oslo, Listen to the hiss from your roadways that mixes with your respiration, proclaims the poet, continuing, while a plane of the future divides the sky into two parts with steel-gray precision. But maybe, if you listen closely, you might hear the white planes hitting the asphalt as the piece ends. So, where are we now? I'm back to where the paper planes hit the ground 30 years ago. Back to where my radio broadcasts were made 40 years ago, though they were never broadcasted, only recorded. I am back to record the bells of the town hall. But today, they are shut down due to some maintenance. Thus, it is only the remembrance that rings in the ambient air. I found myself a bench, sitting and listening to witch sounds that get reflected back from the surrounding walls. I'm thinking about the older the musical memories, the more theater they become. The distance that time makes up between now, here, and back then makes the memories more entangled and possible to play with, more open to be part of my associative game. They are somehow set free, free to my imagination, and thus more vulnerable to my control and composition. At least that's what I'm thinking. But at the same time, as becoming playful and alive, they've become opaque and with their own independent identity, with a certain intrinsic quality which I can't grasp. But I'm really not sure if it is me that play with them, or they that play me, or maybe we have become the same, these early auditory memories, and what I recognize as myself.